Welcome to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe and I'm here on my own today. Truth be told, I've actually been avoiding this for a couple of weeks because of family commitments and having a young baby and all of the amazing amount of work that goes into raising five kids. Kate won't be joining us, and so I've kind of known that that was something that I would need to announce, and hence why I've been avoiding it and not putting a podcast out there. And I think, you know, other than our break over Christmas, it's the only time where I've had a couple of weeks go by without a podcast, and I kind of knew that that wasn't something that I wanted to do, but I also wasn't quite ready to talk about it, so I just let things slide, which is what people tend to do when they're procrastinating. So I had a couple of options with the podcast, because I know that solo podcasts can be a bit boring, to say the least. I do listen to a few presenters on the radio where they don't have like a second person, and there's always a certain amount of awkwardness where you've got somebody and you're talking to an audience but you're not talking to someone next to you. So that'll be a bit of a steep learning curve for me. But I am also looking at, I've lined up a whole bunch of people to interview from within the community so that I can break up some of the soloness of the podcast. And I've also looked at just changing the format a little bit. So up until now, we have had topics, obviously, but it's been quite a conversational podcast. And, you know, I do like to talk to myself, but not quite that much. So I will be focusing more on speaking specifically to a community question and looking at sharing with what I've personally been doing in my training, things that I've come across through the week that I think that will be useful for you, and we'll just let it go from there. And either people will like it or people will stop listening. And if you stop listening, that's fine, because it is going to change, and I will just do my best to make it something that is still going to be really useful for people going forward. But if you'd like to keep up with Kate, you can follow her on Instagram at Kate Says Stuff, and she also has a group that you can look up on Facebook called Says Stuff. And so if you want to keep in contact with her that way, feel free to do that. And it is one of those things that's, you know, it's a big change, and it's always going to be a bit rough to get used to, and probably mostly for me. I think probably the last 2 years have featured me violently opposed to change, but eventually accepting the inevitability of it. So this week I had a question that came out of Run Club, which is it's a simple and it's a complex question, and it was about how to get faster. It's a really common question. I think that once you are in the swing of running 5 kilometres or 3 kilometres or wherever it is that you're at, then the next natural thing is going, okay, but how does this get faster? And I think it's a really good idea to really examine that question before you even take it further than that, and ask yourself, do you want to get faster or do you want it to feel easier? Because a lot of times people confuse those things, and often they do go hand in hand, but the two goals are distinctly separate, and it's a good idea to know what you want to do. And when you say faster, is that faster over 5 kilometres? Is it faster over 1 kilometre? Because your workouts are going to change depending on if you're doing training that's specific to, say, the kilometre or the mile, as opposed to, say, 5 kilometre training or building your distance to be comfortable with 10 kilometres or even half a marathon. It's a great divergence of goals and then of strategies and everything else. But if we are talking about speed, then there are certain things that it's good to know in terms of constructing your program and how your running looks, and also focusing on some issues to do with technique and recovery and things like that. So the first thing to focus on would be a lot of times when people talk about getting faster, and I've certainly experimented with this in the past as well, when you think about getting faster, often the impulse is, well, I just need to run harder. I need higher intensity sessions and all of that sort of stuff. But actually, research that was done in 2007, speaking to that, they had a group of people who are running 80% easy with 20% race-specific type workouts, and then they had another group that was doing about 65% easy and the rest at sort of race-specific and high-intensity workouts. And they found that the 80% group actually got 25% faster than the other group. So even though it seems quite counterintuitive, in order to get faster, you have to have a good portion of all of your running has to be at a really easy pace. It can be frustrating because it takes time and it takes patience and it takes discipline, and it's not necessarily the sort of like the quick fix that people are after. But when you're talking about running, it's really easy to feel like it's taking you a really long time, not realizing that the kind of like run fitness is built in years and decades, not in months. So if you're not interested in a really long-term investment, then it might not be what you want to do. So that would probably be the first part of it, is that. So then if you want to sort of accelerate that process, then you also probably want to look at running more times a week than you do now. It's a balance between, you know, managing your recovery and everything else. But after you've been, say if you start off, when you start running and you're running 3 days a week, once that starts to feel pretty comfortable, then you could look at adding in a fourth day. And again, it depends on your time and what you've got available, but that is another way to add in some of more of those easy sessions into your overall training week. And then probably once you've got all of that established, then you want to make sure that the sessions that you are doing are specifically focused on the outcomes that you have. So say, for example, if you look at something like a 5 kilometer race is probably about, I would say it's about 98% aerobic system. So you have to look at things that are going to benefit that distance. So obviously your aerobic system is very important, but then also a lot of threshold work is very important, and you do want to have some high intensity stuff in terms of sort of that threshold development as well. So looking at specific training for the distance that you're interested in is also going to be really beneficial, because developing speed for the marathon versus the half marathon versus the 10 versus the 5 versus shorter distances is going to vary greatly. So you want to make sure that the sessions that you're doing are specific sessions. And then when you go into more sort of, there's some more technique things that are going to help with speed. One is cadence. So that's the amount of steps per minute. Generally, when people try to go faster, instinct can be to lengthen the stride, but that is actually counterproductive. You want to maintain the same form, but just move your feet faster, essentially. And there are some visual sort of ideas that you can get going to help you kind of get the feeling of it. So you want to feel like your feet are like on a bicycle, and they're like briefly touching the ground before the rebound happens. So really kind of light feet is what you want to be going for. I know when I started it felt more like the thundering of elephants, but that is sort of like the visual that you are going for with cadence. And the other thing that is really going to help is engaging the core, because when the core isn't engaged, then the major muscle groups have to take over, and it just makes it that much harder for you to do everything that you need to do. So if the core's not engaged, then lower back has to work, your quads have to work extra hard, your calves have to work extra hard. If the core is on, then it does its job and those other muscle groups don't have to compensate. So and the core is one of those things that it's, because it's such a subtle muscle activation, it can take quite a while to get a really good sense of what that feels like, because it's not really like a contraction. Like you might experience it as sort of like a quarter contraction or something like that, and it's not the upper abs, like it's not the six pack or the six pack that I would have if it wasn't covered in a generous layer of padding. It is the deep posture muscles, so it's the transverse abdominis that goes, wraps around, and it's literally like a belt, and it's right underneath everything else. So some of the things that help me to make sure my core is activated is if I imagine the two protruding pelvic bones at the front, if I imagine that there's a band between them and I'm just sort of like drawing them closer together, so I should still have essentially like a soft abdominal area when this has happened, because it's not like a full tensing, it's just like a slight tightening. And there are certainly some exercises and some practices that you can do when you're at home that are going to help you kind of get that sense for yourself, because it is something that takes a little while to understand what people mean when they're talking about core activating, because it's usually not something that a lot of people do naturally, and it's a great thing to practice when you're just walking around the house on your own and not running, because you get something that's challenging, like running. It's really easy for a lot of those form things and breathing things to go out the window because you're kind of under stress. So it's great to practice that stuff at home when you're just walking around and you can focus on it, and then it should become more natural when you're running. And another thing that is going to vastly improve speed and also just ease of running is breathing, which is mostly a function of fitness. Like as you get more fit, the breathing will sort of take care of itself. But most of us get into the habit of being chest breathers and not belly breathers. And you can tell what's going on. You know, if you have breathe in and breathe out and you're stomach's not going up and down, then you're not belly breathing. Belly breathing is what you want to be aiming for when you're running. So again, that's something to do at home when you're not under any kind of physical stress, so you can start to feel what it feels like, because the more you're going to be able to sort of improve the strength of the diaphragm that way, and you're able to get a lot more air in that way, which is just going to benefit you so much more when you're running as well. So probably the main final piece that I'll talk about with speed today is recovery, and to go into a little bit of how supercompensation works is you go out and you do something like a run. Your body responds with fatigue, which I'm sure you're all used to. And then if you rest, your body will then compensate for that fatigue by taking itself to a point of higher fitness than what it was before, but only if you have properly recovered. So that is essentially how adaptations happen during recovery. It's not like you go out and you run like a really hard run and then your body then adapts and becomes more fit that way. The fitness improvement only happens during the recovery period. So that makes sleep really important. It makes nutrition really important in the recovery recovery phase to replenish everything that you've used on that run. And it also means that adequate recovery is really important as well. And so that is a really intuitive process with your body, because everyone is different. You know, some people really benefit of having a rest day in between runs. Some people don't feel like they need that, or they're sort of further along and their body's more adapted to running, and so they can have like a hard run day and then an easy run day, and that is giving them good recovery. And I don't necessarily, you know, like I've got like a recovery advisor on my watch, which basically gives me a sense. I'm not exactly, I don't really treat it as gospel, but it does give me a sense of where I'm at in terms of the intensity of the session. So there have been times when I've run a marathon where it said that I needed like probably about 4 days recovery, which is probably pretty accurate. I probably take 5 or 6. And then if at the moment, like if I go for an easy run, it'll say like about 10 hours recovery. And so the more I've used my watch, I think the more accurate it's become. Like when I first started using it, it was pretty ridiculous, but I think it's just sort of learnt more about my heart rate as I've gone on. So it is really important to be aware of where your body is at, and know that often taking an extra rest day is going to mean that you're going to get much more benefits out of the run that you've already done than if you don't do that, particularly if you haven't been sleeping well or you have other stresses going on or anything like that. So you cannot say enough about how important recovery is to all of that, as you know, the same with what you're going to eat. Like you want to eat as soon as you've finished your run. You want to make sure that you are getting all of the vitamins and minerals that you need, as well as all of the carbohydrates that your body needs after a run to recover and repair muscles and do all of that sort of stuff. And generally speaking, you know, the outcomes of people who eat straight after a run far exceed the people who kind of like put it off and eat later, because then when you eat straight afterwards, it's immediately going to muscles that need it. And probably finally is, I like to think about speed in terms of just running in general as like that, you know, it's kind of been slightly debunked in certain areas, but I still like the idea of it as a concept, and that's it. So things take about 10,000 hours for mastery, or about 10 years. And I find that when you look at progress over a much longer period of time, it's a lot easier to see all of the improvements. Like all things, it takes time, and it takes discipline, and it takes patience. And I think it also takes a certain amount of, like, one of the research that did come out of the 10,000 hours was just like time was not the sort of the determining factor. The determining factor was people who were really willing to kind of interact with the process and look at what things were actually improving, what weren't improving, what could they do better. And so it's taking a really inquisitive, really engaged approach to your training, and not just sort of like going out there to get the hours done. It is about creating a dynamic relationship with running and a dynamic relationship with learning, so that you can keep changing and evolving. And in that way, I kind of think of running like it has its own personality. And in some ways, that sort of helps me to look at it in a way that I'm always engaged with it as a living, breathing thing, and not a static thing where I do this and this happens, because that's not how life works. Progress isn't linear, and as much as I might like it to be, and as rewarding as that would be, it's just not how it is. And I think that over a long period of time, you can develop a really rich, really informed, really positive relationship with running that has as much of your personality in it as it has, you know, your structure and, you know, what you want to try to achieve and all the rest of it. So I thought I'd start doing some regular segments on the podcast across three things, which would be the first thing is my previous week in training for anyone who is interested in that. So I have just come to the end of just about to go into my taper week this week. So last week I had a bit of a lighter week in that I decided to take a break from my strength workouts. So I did running and CrossFit last week. So at the moment I have a bit of a routine of Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays I'll go to CrossFit, and then I will do an easy paced 8 kilometres afterwards, because that's just about the amount of time I have before I have to get home to get the kids ready for school and everything like that. And so then I will tend to do my quality sessions or higher intensity stuff on Tuesdays or Thursdays, and I have my long run on Saturdays. So that's sort of the schedule that I've been in. So this week I had mile repeats, five of them, which is 1.6 kilometers, which is my least favorite of any, pretty much any workout, because they're so long. And it was one of those funny things where it was on a day where the kids ended up being home, so I couldn't go out, and it would have been really easy for me to cancel it and just put it off because it's not something that I enjoy doing. But my mum was back, and so I got her to come and watch the kids while I went out and did my run. And one of the great things about getting to the end of a training cycle is your fitness is usually a lot better than what you think it is. So I was out doing my repeats and I was like, this isn't so bad. Like, I feel okay. This feels pretty good. And so then by the time I finished, I had, like, I've got this watch that I'm currently using last year after Gold Coast, I think. So I've had it for almost a year, and I don't like transfer over the old PBs because I like it whenever I get a new watch PB. So when I get things and it says like fastest 5K or fastest 10K, that's just for the last year. But I'm happy with that because I like the reward of getting a new record. So I finished that and I had like a 5K and a 10K PB. I thought, oh, I might have to rethink my hatred of 1.6 kilometre intervals. So that's really nice when you get to the end of a cycle like that and things actually start to feel a little bit easier. And then the other main session that I had for the week was on the weekend, and I had to do sort of like an 18 kilometre steady run and then an 8 kilometre negative split after that, which is just where you get faster and faster. So it's all about pacing it and not like going out too hard. So the idea was I start at my sort of at my steady pace and I go faster and faster until the end. The last kilometre would be at like more like half marathon pace. So I did that on the weekend. I always sort of dread those sessions, like, am I going to be able to do it? Am I going to be able to pace it okay? And then I always feel great afterwards. So it was a pretty good week all in all, and I think it was the right decision to not do the my normal strength sessions, which I usually do 2 to 3 times a week, and I just focus on some strict movements like squats and pressing and that kind of stuff to improve strength. But I just felt that I needed a little bit more recovery than that for the last week, so that's what I did. The next thing that I thought would be good to talk about on a regular basis is things that I am trying out or using. Could be gear, could be tech. This week I thought I'd talk a little bit about Headspace, which is an app that I downloaded to help me start meditating again, which is just such a great thing I find for just mental health and just creating a bit of that space for myself during the day and a bit of clarity. And once I get into the swing of things, I'm usually fine to meditate without any guided meditation. But to start off with, it's been a while since I've been doing it, so I thought that the Headspace app would help. You can download it and use the free version, and then if you like it, you can choose to upgrade to their subscription based version if you like. But so the first one I did was just about 10 minutes, so it's not loads and loads of time, and you're basically doing a guided meditation, and it takes you through, you know, how to sit and what to do. And it's great if you find the idea of sitting down and trying to meditate a bit intimidating. So that's something that I've been doing this week. And the other thing that I thought that I would do on a regular basis is talk about something that I've read or listened to during the week that I found really interesting. And I was listening to this podcast, and they were interviewing somebody about nutrition, and it was interesting. He was talking about moderators and abstainers, and there are sort of two schools of thought of if you believe in the concept of a moderator and an abstainer anyway. But basically it's that some people, it's a lot easier for them to say, like, cut out chocolate entirely rather than have just a little bit of chocolate. And I think for most people there are things that they can moderate and things that they are far better off just abstaining from most of the time. So, you know, like, I can moderate chocolate fairly easily. Like, the kids had Easter eggs in the fridge for God knows how long, and I just, doesn't really bother me. But you have like, if there's an open bag of potato chips, well, that's, you know, that's not something that I can really moderate. Similarly, can't really moderate garlic bread or things like that. So I'm much more on the sort of, on anything that's sort of high fat, high carb, very hard for me to moderate. So anyway, it was interesting. He was talking about that as a concept. And when they did this, survey of dietitians, and they found that based on this concept of abstaining and moderating, 90% of dietitians who were practicing in coaching other people were actually moderators. So that then impacted their bias in terms of what advice they were giving people, which is often just moderate it. But, you know, for most people who have, like myself, who have struggled moderating, you can't just say, like, here is like this huge snack aisle, everything in moderation. That doesn't actually work for most people. And so, like, I'm much better off saying, well, I'm not going to eat that at all, except for on special occasions or whatever it is that I come up with that works for me. But I think it was really interesting to kind of take a look at that. Does everything in moderation actually lead to moderation, or for most people, does it actually lead to things that aren't going to be necessarily useful for you overall in the long term? So that is definitely worth thinking about if you are doing something like me, where you're focusing on your nutrition and just sort of experimenting with what does work for you. You know, are you much better off with moderation, or are you better off with some things pretty much abstaining, except for in some set situation? Was also watching this documentary series on Netflix with Michael Johnson, who's the ex-sprinter, called Chasing Perfection, which was really interesting. And if you have Netflix, definitely check it out. And one of the fascinating things to me is they had these identical twins, and what they'd found, and they were both in training and were, you know, competing at a high level and all the rest of it. But what they'd actually found is that even people with, like, twins with identical genetics responded differently to training, which I thought was just fascinating, that even if you can kind of completely level the playing field like that, they will not respond to the same workouts in the same way, which just highlighted to me how important it is to really make sure that you're doing things that work for you and not for anyone else, even if that someone else happens to be a twin. So that's pretty much it for the podcast this week. I'm hoping to start doing some interviews so we can also have some meet a mover type segments and also talk to people after some of their races and things like that, so it's not just me talking. So hopefully next week I will have something along those lines for you. But in the meantime, things that we've got coming up which you might like to find out more about is we have created an Operation Move team for the Whole Life Challenge, which starts on the 20th of May and it goes for 2 months. I picked it because it's app-based, so it's really easy for everyone to get involved with, even if you're not on social media with Facebook groups and all the rest of it. But I also really liked it because it was sort of, it goes off 7 habits. So there's exercise, nutrition, sleep, hydration, reflection, mobility, and also like some other lifestyle practices as well. And instead of it being a huge investment, say, for example, the exercise component is just 10 minutes a day. So 10 minutes of any type of moving that you want to do. So it's a great way to try on a whole bunch of different things. And there's a point system. So it also makes it a lot more fun because you're logging your points for all of your various habits. And at the moment, we've got a team of about 46 people. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you would like to check that out, I've linked up the sign up link to our Instagram account. So it's just in the bio there. So you can just go to OpMove on Instagram and go check it out from there. Or you can also see we've shared it in the community group as well. So you can go check it out there if you like as well. I've also got a coaching group for Learn to Run, which starts on the 29th of May. And it is, there's just going to be one group. I think that at the moment there's maybe 33 spaces left. And that's the last Learn to Run group that we will do until August. So if it's something that you interested in, jump on it now so that you can reserve your spot, because the Facebook group is all set up and good to go now. So anybody who signs up early can go through the preparation tasks with me and start to get to know all of the people who are going to be in their group and just start to get into some of the habits that we work on in Learn to Run, which is a lot of fun. So I will talk to you guys next week. Anything that you want to chat to me about, you can email me at zoe@operationmove.com.au, or you can just tag me in the community group and I will have a chat to you in there. Speak to you next week. Bye.